It's time to head south with the Fanta from Down Under.
The Fanta.
Land me up, Osborne.
From Down Under.
Do. Or do not. There is no try.
G'day, mate. How you going?
Here is your host, Adam O'Brien.
G'day, mate. How you going? May the force be with you. This is Adam O'Brien, the Fanta from Down Under, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. And joining me today is the one, the only, Eric Onkenhout, all the way from Boston, Massachusetts, and the United States of America, to chat some Star Wars and what he's been up to in fandom.
G'day, mate. How you going? This is the one, the only, Fanta from Down Under, from here in Gold Coast, Quinlan's Cantina, and I'm joined today by a dear friend of mine all the way from the United States in a place called Boston, Massachusetts. He's a dear friend who loves Star Wars, loves writing, and I think at the end of the day, you will remember him from many of the great shows that he's done, not only here, but one that he did with me also on OzFans, which was a lot of fun too. That is the one, the only, Eric Onkenhout. Mate, how are you?
I'm doing wonderful. How are you?
Yeah, really good. The fact that I can actually talk right now is a miracle in itself. I've been sick, folks. I've been sick for about 2 to 3 weeks. So any of the shows that you guys have been listening to were recorded months in advance. So the fact that I'm now back and ready to rock and roll and chat some Star Wars, mate, I tell you what, can't wait.
I'm glad you're feeling better.
Thanks, buddy. I thought we'd get the ball rolling with a game of Star Wars Trumps. So I hope you're ready for some Star Wars trivia, and I'm sure that's right. We're going to be shuffling them cards, folks. Shuffling them cards. Let's just see what the man knows. All right, here we go. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Which opening crawl begins with "It is a period of civil war"?
Star Wars: A New Hope.
Perfect. Well done. Well done. All right. Shuffling them cards, folks. Shuffling them cards. Here we go. Here we go. What was Chancellor Palpatine's first act after being granted emergency power by the Senate?
Oh, he okayed the creation of the Grand Army.
Of the Republic. Yes, he did. Two for two. Shuffling them cards, folks. Shuffling them cards. Here we go. All right. All right. Looks like a lot of prequel questions today, isn't it? Okay, here we go. What makes destroyer droids particularly hard to destroy?
They have shields.
That's right. Deflector shield generators. That's right. Well, three for three. We're going 3 for 3 here. All right, here we go. Oh, this will be a good one. Are sand people responsible for the attack on the Jawa sand crawler that C-3PO and R2-D2 had been inside?
Are they responsible? Wait, let me think. No.
Correct, correct. It was Imperial Stormtroopers because they're so precise. Yeah. Isn't it funny how they can't hit a thing in the movie, but they're so precise when Kenobi... Only Imperial Stormtroopers are so precise. Well, Kenobi, maybe you're thinking about clone troopers.
Ben Kenobi's full of it.
Yeah, I reckon he's been having too many of those blue milk lattes, mate.
No kidding. Too much Kahlua.
On which planet do Poe Dameron and Finn crash the stolen TIE fighter? Oh, wow. You're going to get 5 for 5 here.
Jakku.
Jakku, that's the one. Yeah, big thank to, of course, Top Trump's Quizzes. That was fantastic. They're actually a great little unit for any fans, young or old. Go and check them out, and all your retailers. Now, folks, we have been away, and there's been a lot going on. Obviously, Fanta Tracks growing exponentially. The folks in the UK and the US as well, too, have been to a lot of the local events lately, so you're seeing a lot of that popping up on the site. And, of course, I can just see now features on the site. We have Fantasy Flight Games doing a huge new nod with the Star Wars X-Wing with capital ships now.
I've always wanted to play that game.
It's a brilliant game. It really is. Of course, we're talking about Fantasy Flight Games, who have been doing Star Wars now since about 2012. So it's been quite a few years that they've had not just the miniatures. They've also had the role-playing game Edge of the Empire. They've also got the Rebel Alliance one. They've also got, of course, the Jedi one. Now, these are games that you can play singularly, as in like their own little universe, or you can also pretty much mix it up. Unlike the games in the past, so Star Wars by West End and, of course, Wizards of the Coast, D20 Star Wars, which was in the early 2000s, this is a little bit different because the great thing about this is They're games using the core system of FFG's narrative dice, which is really interesting. So the dice themselves don't have numbers on them. They have fails and saves, pretty much. They have their own little icons. But it's set to a narrative way.
I've played, I think it's called Edge of the Empire, the role-playing game with some guys like a few years ago. It was fun. I had a good time.
Yeah, so that one would have been the one that's sort of based around smugglers and scoundrels and sort of the crime element, if you like, of Star Wars.
Yeah.
And what's great about that, too, is that the ship combat in that, I think, is probably one of the best that's been done. I played all the editions of Star Wars. Personally, my favourite still to this day is West End, the original D6 Star Wars from back in the 90s, of course, when this all really kicked off. And, of course, Pablo Hidalgo himself was all up and involved in that stuff back in the day. And from what I hear, still plays West End Star Wars. So
nice.
But, yes, the ships, the actual miniatures themselves, even if you are a collector of just minis, well worth checking these out. The fact that you get the TNT-4 now, which looks absolutely glorious. But I will say, folks, don't be looking for it cheaply, because you won't find it cheap. These are expensive. Some of them are up in the rise of almost $200 Australian. So they are expensive, but, I mean, the paint jobs on these are fantastic. Even my dear pals, James and Todd, who have collected the earlier ones, so everything from the Fighters to the Millennium Falcon to the Slave One, they all look fantastic. I just wish maybe they were die-cast metal.
Oh, yeah. What are they? Are they plastic or metal?
So these ones are actually a plastic. They're sort of like both mix of that and resin, I think, on some of them as well.
Yeah.
The quality is there. Like, they are absolutely gorgeous when it comes to it, too.
I know.
Hi, this is Gareth Edwards, director of the best standalone Star Wars film since Caravan of Courage, called Rogue One. You're listening to Panther Tracks. Enjoy.
Now, I want to get your thoughts on this, Eric. What about Vader Immortal, the new VR game with a story built in it, of course, all about Darth Vader? Have you seen much of this?
You know, it's funny. I actually saw, I think it was on YouTube, somebody posted episode one or whatever it is, like the walkthrough, the game. It looked really good. It looked like it was just good quality. It wasn't choppy or anything like that. It was really, just flowed really good.
It's interesting that they chose Vader and Vader's castle, isn't it?
Yeah. They're doing a lot with Vader's castle lately. You know, the comic series. I think even Snoke's ring was, the material was found under his castle or something like that. Yeah, there's a lot going on with that.
It's epic, isn't it? I mean, the design itself, going back to it being part of Mustafar now, and, you know, the fact that in Rogue One, they didn't even need the subtitle. We knew what it was. You know, like, you know, usually
they all knew what it was.
Yeah, yeah. Every other planet was getting, you know, a name, and then all of a sudden we go to this flaming ball of fire, and then there's that castle, and the design is right up there with Ralph McQuarrie's original concepts for the end of Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
You know, it's classic stuff. But what's interesting to me is that this could really be applied to everything. You know, and personally, I don't reckon they should be doing the bigger characters. I reckon Bib Fortuna VR. Just imagine, Bib Fortuna, he's
a Jabba's guys.
Yeah, I mean, think about it. Like, just chilling out in Jabba's palace, like, you know, it's not an action game. It would be him going around doing the deals, getting in the talent to come in and work in the nightclub area. People working, he needs to talk to the bounty hunters and go, hey, look, this guy owes us credits. Can you go out there and get him, please? You know, all that sort of stuff. Can you imagine Jabba as a boss, man? I mean, he wouldn't take any crap, would he? I mean, oh, sure, but Jabba, I can get a good deal on some land speeders. Oh, sure, you know, like,
there was this one story. It was one from IDW where, like, Bib Fortuna wanted a day off. Jabba's like, yeah. After you go do this, you can take a break. You know, you can come back, finish the job. Can I take a break now? No, go do that, and then you can take a break. Finally, Bib Fortuna, like, after, like, 10 times trying, he's like, I quit. You know, Jabba's like, what do you mean? Can't quit. It was pretty funny.
You can't quit the huts, man, honestly. Yeah. Maybe he goes to work for pizza.
Pizza the Hut.
So, I think the technology is just amazing. I mean, I've got the lightsaber VR game that was coming out a couple of years ago now. Apart from the fact that you get a proper actual Anakin lightsaber, which is fantastic, or now a Rey one, obviously.
Yeah.
The technology is just beyond me. Sort of, I think, blows my mind if you could rewind 25 years back to, you know, I think some of the more, for me, interesting parts of the saga came out. If we knew we were getting that sort of technology to have at home and to actually play games, and it's almost too much to blow your mind with, you know? It's crazy.
You can just imagine, you know, just use your imagination.
Well, the best imagination or the best movies are the ones that are in your mind, because at the end of the day, the budget's unlimited.
Exactly. You don't have to follow the story. You just make up kind of your own deal.
Part of that, too, is, I think, too, the fact that it could be applied to anything, whether it's technology of what we're talking about now, obviously Vader. But, I mean, that could easily be a land speeder game or a snow speeder battle on Hoth, or it could be behind the controls of a TIE fighter or an X-Wing. I mean, we're in a whole new setup here. I'm just very excited to see where it all goes.
You know, what I like, too, is that they're trying different mediums. You know, they've done the movies, done books, comic books, and now they're getting into video games, but not just playing with the controller. I mean, it's like VR and the technology, like you said, it's like getting higher and higher every time. It's like, what are they going to do next?
G'day, how you going? This is how you can catch me on the web. That's right, your host, Adam O'Brien, the Fanther from Down Under. You can catch it Obi Pop Culture on both Twitter and Instagram. You can also catch me on the one, the only, Fandom Podcast Network's Lethal Mullet Podcast. But check out Fantha Tracks itself. Check it out at FanthaTracks.com. All your Star Wars news in one single file.
Now, folks, the other thing that's been released in the last week is the brand new Stormtrooper we're going to be seeing in the ranks of the First Order. And, of course, this is in The Rise of Skywalker. And, of course, it's the Red Sith Trooper. What do we think about this?
Yeah. I wonder why it's called a Sith Trooper. I mean, I know supposedly Palpatine's coming back.
Palpatine.
So does that mean he's going to be in the movie more? I mean, did he create this legion of troopers?
Well, I mean, that's the question.
Kylo Ren's not a Sith. Why would you call them Sith Troopers?
What does Palpatine have here that, you know, and what is he trying to do? What is he trying to achieve? Because, I mean, obviously the big bad right now is still Kylo Ren. You know, it's... He is Supreme Leader Ren. What kind of threat does Palpatine place on somebody that's apparently one of the most powerful Force users ever? But let's face it, if he's back, and whether it's back from the dead or whether he didn't die and he's still back that way, we really don't know. But he is a Sith. Maybe he needs troopers to have as well.
And you notice that the design is a little bit different than a regular Stormtrooper.
He looks it looks a little clone. Especially the front of that visor, you know, where the nose part is there.
Yeah.
It kind of looks like Episode 3 a little bit.
I think there's a scene of Kylo Ren and Rey fighting on this planet where there's a big chunk of the Death Star. I'm thinking they find some kind of remnant of the Emperor in the Death Star or some sort of recording. I don't think the Emperor's going to be in the movie physically. Yeah, I don't think so. I don't know. I just think that's kind of a... I mean, I could be wrong. And if I'm wrong, that's fine.
Yeah.
I don't care. But... I just can't imagine, because I think he would just take over the whole movie.
He's the big bad of the saga, at the end of the day. Like, you know, he's been literally hanging around since Episode 1.
Yep.
The question is, what story point would he play in this? You know, what's it going to do to really round out the current heroes? So, obviously, Poe, Finn, Rose, Rey, you know, Leia, Luke, and Lando now, obviously, as well. Maz Kanata as well is going to be in the film. How is his threat going to impact on them? And I think the thing is, at the end of the day, it's a test. It's not so much even about Palpatine. It's about the test that he poses to them. And also, it's a big test for Kylo Ren, because if he's got this threat, and obviously he's got a bond somehow, some way, we're not sure how, with Rey. So obviously he got that Force connection.
Oh, and Rebels?
Or
I don't know if you ever watched Rebels, but there was a scene where the Emperor, or Palpatine, whatever you want to, Sidious... where he was, like, talking to Ezra, trying to get him to come through some portal. You know, he was showing images of his parents and trying to get him to come through, and he resisted. I'm thinking maybe the Emperor might be doing something like that to Rey. These are your parents, you know, why don't you come over here and take a closer look?
I still stand by the thing I said years ago. Your answer's right in front of you in Force Awakens. You only have to look at Takanoga to see where... Oh, Takodona, sorry. Where the Falcon's coming down, and you just look at how Han looks at Rey.
Oh,
it's evident. Now, you also look at how Leia doesn't really recognize this person. And think about when that person was let go from her parents. So would you really recognize your kid if it was 25 plus years later?
I have no idea. I don't have kids.
No, well, same, yeah. But the main point being, Harrison kind of had a, you know, in the performance, it's there. I think this is the daughter, a Solo. The connection's there. People going, oh, it's blah, blah, blah. Well, you're entitled to enjoy your theories, and obviously you're entitled to, you know, your thoughts on where this could go. But I think the biggest thing is what is visually evident of what JJ's done. And let's just face it, he's a very obvious storyteller. Look at the Wrath of Khan stuff that he did in Into Darkness. You know, like, it's, even to the point of screaming, you know, he's got, Jim, are you okay? Jim, are you going to be fine? Khan! You know, like, it's obvious. But yeah. I think the thing is, the whole time, Ryan was told to do it and in some way, throw the ball away from where it was to really, I think, misdirect, you know, the storytelling a little bit so that people get a bit confused. And it's a good way of sort of building up that cliffhanger a little bit, if you like. Building up the mystery, the intrigue. It's great because we're all talking about it still. And I think that's Absolutely. What's so great. It's a genius of what Rian Johnson did. So when JJ drops the bombshell that, hey, this is Rey Solo, yeah, she was in the Jedi Temple when it got attacked, but I personally think she is a young Jedi in there. They thought they killed her, but she survived. That's what I think.
Yeah, yeah. I think that was a misdirection that looked at Han gave Rey. They wanted to make it seem obvious. That's why I don't think it is obvious. I don't know.
Mm.
I just feel like that's a trick. I like where you're going with the Rey being in the temple when it went down. Definitely. I also heard something about somebody had a rumor going around that the people that dropped her off in Jakku were not her parents, but they were just taking care of her for a while or something like that.
It could end up being more of the people that were, you know, friends of Luke's or something like that. It could even be Lor San Tekka.
Hello, I'm Warwick Davis, and you're listening to Fanthatrax.
What's interesting about it, too, is it kind of brings back that Force back, or whatever they call the going through, looking through the memories of the Force. That would actually make sense that she has memories of those things that she wouldn't technically know unless she was there. Part of that is the Knights of Ren being there and, you know, somebody getting a bit of a clean of house. And it's pretty obvious the Knights of Ren would be those students of Luke's who just went with Kylo, pretty much.
That's probably what's going to happen. We haven't really seen them at all, but we keep hearing about them. They're the students. But I think Kylo's going to take them out anyway.
Oh, I think so too. It's a threat because any of those that have force power or force sensitivity are a threat. You know, there should only be one force user. He learnt that through his grandfather, that you have to take out all the threats around you.
Well, you got to have a student. You can't just have yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Only one and an apprentice, you know, and that's
exactly.
It. That's how the Sith work. It's going to be interesting to see how that sort of comes about now. How that story comes through. It's going to be very, very interesting to the fact that it's going to propel all those characters to their next level. And, of course, this is the end point of the Skywalker saga. Will we see another Death Star? Well, we already know we're seeing one Death Star. But why is there a Death Star involved in this movie? Is there more to that than meets the eye?
Gotta be. Otherwise, it wouldn't be in it. That's my opinion.
What if it's functional?
Functional? But it's in pieces.
It is, but it's been quite a few years.
Yeah. You already have a theory cooking up in your head. I can already tell by the look on your face.
Well, there's been theories out there for a little while that on a Reddit recently, there was a couple of people that, I think it was an AMA where a leaker was hinting that what if it is functional? Well, that would change things. If Palpatine has function of the turbo laser on the moon of Endor, you know?
So, I guess anything's possible, but I can't see that happening.
No, me neither.
I think blue like the smithereens.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Look, we don't know whether this is Endor. This could be Yavin. This could be anywhere. The Death Star blew up into a million pieces both times. And, you know, who knows? Palpatine could have been just riding it on a surfboard style thing through the galaxy going, yes, I've got the power now.
Yeah.
You know, and
he's riding a chunk of the Death Star down to Endor.
And then just chilling out, barbecuing Ewoks when he needs to feed. You know, like that's probably what he's doing, you know?
It's a cool thought that I think this movie is supposed to literally connect all 9 movies together. A piece of each movie is supposed to be in this one.
Fantatrax. Now, moving on from movie news, we have to say a sad farewell to a Star Wars actor and just a great, I think, friend of fandom, and also one that I think is a very talented guy. I've chatted to him a number of times, even on my previous shows, and that is, of course, the actor Roni Bridges from Scotland, who passed away just 2 days ago. Our condolences out to the family and friends of Roni Bridges. Somebody who I always thought was great to chat to, also very interesting actor too, was in Outlander and, of course, Valhalla Rising, the Nicholas Winding Refn film as well. Again, from all of us here at Fantatrax, our condolences out to his family and loved ones. So Daisy Ridley has been doing the rounds, of course. She's actually been looking at a few things as she's been doing the circuit. She's been looking at that footage of the stunt woman, Michelle, who does the great...
I saw that.
Have you seen it?
Yeah. It's awesome. Her reaction to it is like, she's just like, your jaw's on the floor.
That's just amazing. The acrobatic work that Michelle does is just...
Yeah,
mind-boggling how do those things, even with a lightsaber, you know, it's amazing. So hats off to Michelle for that. But now Daisy seeing all this done, you think, wow, why don't they pick her up as the new stunt woman?
I know, but what are they waiting for?
I know, it's just brilliant. I mean, who knows, in some of these newer films where they, if they have Jedi and lightsabers, maybe they can bring that in. This year marks the 20th anniversary of a certain film. Do you know which one that is?
Phantom Menace.
The Phantom Menace, that's right. Now, are you guys getting any special screenings over in the US right now for that?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah, here in Australia, I think a cinema down in Sydney or Melbourne had done a screening. But one of the things about The Phantom Menace is that around this time, we had a lot of magazines, books. I mean, you can imagine the amount of merchandising is not on the scale it is now, but it's still pretty full on back then. Some of the great stuff that was coming out was the Terry Brooks novelization of The Phantom Menace. And those that don't know Terry Brooks, who's a fantastic fantasy author in his own right, of course, with the Shannara series.
I've heard of it.
Now, of course, Shannara is a series not too far removed from Star Wars. You know, it's a fantasy series which kind of has the very Joseph Campbell style of bringing things together in a, especially in a way that puts a hero into a number of different hurdles to grow them to become the person that they are. And, of course, if you've seen the TV show The Shannara Chronicles, you can actually see the adaptation of the Elstones of Shannara. Again, in the Rise of Star Wars and George Lucas himself, Lucas used the same story editor as Terry Brooks back in the day. Isn't that crazy?
Didn't the first book come out, like, the same year as Star Wars?
77, yeah.
Yeah. See, I know something.
And, of course...
Not much.
But the thing about Shannara series itself, too, is that the magic is used in a way that's pretty reminiscent of the Force. But one of the things about that series is that it's out of all the fantasy series. It's kind of, I suppose, got a lot of links in the way it's told, and it's heavily influenced by Lord of the Rings, particularly the Sword of Shannara, the first book. But when you get past that into the sequels and the ongoing books that happen on that line, you can really see a relatable fantasy that's used almost like period drama to tell a heroic story in the way of Star Wars. So really worth checking out. Now, folks, if you're also a fantasy reader and you like Margaret Weiss, who I think is one of the greatest fantasy authors out there, has a book by the name of The Lost King, part of Star of the Guardians, which is fantasy science fiction. I tell you what, this is done by Bandit Press back in the day. This is the first volume. I found it dug out in my storage areas. This is Star Wars. It really is. I mean, this is right up there with, not exactly the same, but it has the same power. Made by the same publisher, Bantam Spectra. Of course, they made Star Wars back in the day of the Thrawn trilogy. But this is right up there. I mean, look, it's even got a laser sword. Look at that, look at that, look at that. It even has a Democratic Republic.
No kidding.
Yep, no kidding. It has a warlord. So it's, look, I think all the cornerstones are there. I mean, this came out in, let's have a look. We're talking Tracy Hickman and Margaret Weiss, 1990, this came out. So it's even got a blurb at the front of it from Plato, from the book The Republic.
Mm. So have you read the Dragonlance books?
I have. I enjoyed them. Do you like them?
I never read them, but when I was like 9 or 10, my older sister, who was, I think, my cat.
Hello.
I think she had them, but I don't remember if she ever read them. I remember staring at the covers, thinking how cool they looked.
They're very, very
beautiful.
But I think
they were a little bit beyond my age range at the time. I never read them.
They were always fun. I always enjoyed the books themselves. But when you look at, I think, in terms of fantasy, for me, it was the Forgotten Realms books.
And those came out, like, in the 80s?
Yeah, pretty much. It was all 80s. You know, brilliant, though. And they still got some afterwards as well. And I think the key to what I enjoyed about them as well was that, again, the fantasy is relatable, but you got used to some really brilliant characters. One of them, Salvatore's Driss d'Urden, which, I mean, these elven characters as well that were just absolutely a lot of fun.
The Forgotten Realms, is that a spin-off of Dungeons & Dragons?
Yes, it is, yes. It's all part of Dungeons & Dragons universes, yeah. So, I mean, there's so much involved in Dungeons & Dragons itself. They've got different worlds, different universes and stuff like that built into it. So it's,
yeah.
I liken it to the DC multiverse.
Oh, wow, okay. So what is your favorite all-time fantasy series, book series?
Ooh, okay, now you're talking. Personally, it's, you know, and a lot of people would go straight to Game of Thrones, but, you know, and obviously A Song of Ice and Fire. I don't know that I would. I would actually probably go to Terry Brooks because you're able to pick up the story pretty much anywhere. And he even wrote some books years later that are set in the real world. That no one had any idea were actually part of the fantasy universe. And then he told people 20 years later, and they're like, "Whoa!" So they're great. But what I like about it, it's such a big story. It comes with a massive timeline. And in that timeline, you can put yourself, basically, because we are where we are in the writer things. Basically, if you look at it, in this period here, so we've got ourselves in the early 2000s, in about another 3,000 years, that's when all the fantasy kicks off. So basically, World War III comes along there. Watch everything out. But out of those ashes come trolls, ogres, elves. Magic reawakens, basically. And then before all of us, before science came along, when religion and mysticism and people believed in the magic, it was still there. And the elves have been around the whole time. So when science came along and pretty much crushed it, after that, between that 3,000 years, we have Mad Max in fantasy world. And that's what I love about it too. So if you read Armageddon's Children, folks, you're going to get Mad Max meets Lord of the Rings.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And I reckon they should make that part into the movie. Get that going. But yeah, so Shannara would be my pick. What about you?
For fantasy books?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even think I've read a single fantasy book my whole life. I think I read The Hobbit. I was like, okay. And I started reading The Fellowship, and I got about halfway through, and I gave up.
Honestly, as much as, and this is a fair criticism some people have, you know, J.R. Tolkien takes a little bit to get into. You know, he was a linguist and somebody who wrote about languages and stuff like that, but wasn't a novelist. You know, so he doesn't have quite the novelist's touch. It's more about the world that he created. So some of those stories can be a little bit difficult to get into. Yeah. I love it for the world. That's why I love reading those. However, I'm not right in with the Hobbit stuff. I've never been a huge fan. I appreciate it, but that's where Shannara takes over. There's no Hobbit stuff. Gets the ball rolling straight away, right? You know, and the only ones in this are more akin to Aragorn, you know, really getting in there and just rocking and rolling.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit more action heavy. And I think the druids in this, which are the witches and the masters of magic and stuff like that, just that little bit more interesting.
Now that I think about it, I read a couple of fantasy books that were written, I want to say late 60s, early 70s, like very obscure. I don't know if you ever heard of the Flashing Sword series.
Yeah, that sounds familiar. Yeah, I think I have.
I think I read one of those books. I think maybe it was book one. And it was edited by Lynn Carter. I guess he was like a pretty well-known fantasy writer at the time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The only reason I bought it, honestly, is because I saw a picture of George Lucas holding it.
nice.
So I bought it.
And a big thanks to Eric for being on the show tonight. Stay tuned for the next episode of The Phantom from Down Under, where Eric joins us for part two of his conversation all about Star Wars and fantasy books and the influences of Star Wars here on Phantom Tracks Radio's The Phantom from Down Under. I'm Adam O'Brien. We'll catch you next time.